The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today.
It's time for the week trending, and our panel is here. Ian Power, Chief Executive of spunout.ie, and Ro McDermott, Irish Times advice columnist, are with us in studio. You're both very welcome. It's great to see you. We've lots to get through. We are, of course, going to be talking about Taylor Swift. Only another few days to go before the Jamboree arrives in Ireland. But before that, we've got lots of other things to talk about. Ro and Ian, we had all this week, the big story, the big domestic story running was Eamon Ryan stepping down as Green Party leader. And I think across the board, there has been a lot of reaction to his departure, particularly around some of the stuff he said about how he couldn't commit any more to the hours, the long, hard hours working, both as a TD, working on as a minister, and working with all the international commitments as well.
Yeah, and I think he said that he, for 30 years now, he's either been seeking a position in office or being in office, which is a huge amount of time to commit to something. And I think the amount of time that we expect politicians to give to this, I think even Leo Varadkar indicated this when he stepped down, that he said, you know, family commitments, I want to be able to have a life to have a rest, because you might be working 5-6 days a week, but it's 24 hours a day and you're constantly responding to things. But I think what has come through this week is that even for people who disagree with Eamon Ryan, there's such a huge amount of respect for him, because I think he's always been ambitious in his plans. He's been a great leader in terms of bringing the Green Party back from oblivion at a few points. But I also think he's been incredibly respectful. You know, there were always some personal attacks against Eamon Ryan. There were kind of, you know, nasty comments along the way, and he said early on in his career that really impacted him, and that he learned to kind of brush it off unless it was about his family. But I think people are really crying out for more respectful politics, and I think the Greens often become a scapegoat, and Eamon Ryan became a scapegoat of other parties to say, oh yeah, Eamon Ryan doesn't care about people in rural Ireland, or the Green Party don't care about people in rural Ireland, and they were almost perpetuating this narrative to see if it would stick that wasn't backed up by a lot of the policies that the Green Party brought in. But I think he never responded personally, and he never indulged that kind of nitty, petty kind of discourse. And I think that's really important. And this seems like a bit of a stretch, but there was a video that came online during the week, and it was looking at the discourse in America with Trump and Biden, and how horrible and petty and name-calling the discourse has become, from particularly from the Trump side. And it was a flashback to John McCain. And it was when Obama was coming up and Obama was running. And John McCain, there was a rally and people were expressing their support, and a woman took a mic and said, I love you, I think you're amazing, I hate Obama, he's an Arab, he's a Muslim, he's not American, he's not a patriot. And John McCain took the mic back from her and said, you know what, Obama and I disagree on certain issues, but he is a good man, he's a good American, I respect him, I'm not going to let you say that. And I think, and people really responded to this clip, because I think people want respect in politics, and they want people to recognise that even if people have different answers of how to move forward, everyone wants to move forward. And Eamon Ryan was just always so respectful and wanted to move forward.
He did mention in that speech as well, outside government buildings, about the online trolling he gets. And he did get it during the interview I did with him the other day. There was a lot of text coming in against him. But we are seeing this from politicians now. They are noticing the impact that trolls are having.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of the politicians who are stepping out of politics are talking about it as being a factor, maybe not the main factor for the reason. And I think like Eamon Ryan's talking about his family commitments and things like that. But it's definitely an issue. And I think it's something that we have to crack down on. And I know that the new regulator, Commissioner Naman, is about to hopefully, you know, launch the new online safety binding code. And hopefully that will start to have an impact. But I think we do need to have a conversation about kind of respectful discourse and exchange of ideas. The thing about Eamon Ryan, I think for me, that was really interesting is just that the green agenda is in all of our interests, right? You know, and that's the thing I think people respected about him the most, is that he believed in something, he had a set of principles, he had a vision for how to kind of go about things. I think he's been a hugely impactful politician. If you read Caroline O'Doherty's piece in the Irish Independent this week, it's really kind of remarkable how much of an impact he's had, not just domestically, but internationally as well, in terms of the EU nature restoration law, at a world level in terms of COP and negotiations there. But I think one of the things that I think is fair is that, you know, agriculture, we know that the Green Party has a tricky relationship with the agriculture sector. I think if your agenda is a green one, I think you do have to kind of set forth a vision for people who are fearful about their livelihoods and kind of bring people along with you. And if there was one kind of criticism I would have, it's that that vision was never really set out for people. It's, you know, a positive one, a one that can actually bring about hopefulness amongst people who are fearful about what their future holds. So for me, I think that the vilification of Eamon Ryan is completely unwarranted. I think Ryanair have been completely unedifying this week. Michael O'Leary should be ashamed of and embarrassed
such
for his life.
Such a petty individual. It's, like, with so much money, get a hobby.
I know. And it's just, you know, I think a lot
of
people...
I think he's had to give up his hobby, really.
A lot of people are switched off by that. Obviously, you've got people who want him to be Taoiseach and whatever, and genuinely, I would be fearful of the day that that would ever come to pass. But, you know, I think for the most part, I've been really pleased to see Eamon Ryan get his flowers this week and for people to be celebrating the impact he's had on Irish life.
And I think an important thing to remember is that it's very difficult to focus on environmental issues when people are struggling in the now. Because as Ian said, it's about creating a vision, it's about long-term thinking, it's about thinking of the future. When people are struggling economically in the present, that is very difficult to do. But those are problems caused by current government. So that's Fine Gael, that's Fianna Fáil. Those are long-term policies around housing, around cost of living, not tackling those issues. I think people often conflate of you're creating a vision for an environment that I can't latch onto and that's your fault and that's pie in the sky thinking and going, no, actually the problems that are stopping you from getting there are the fault of other parties. So let's address those.
When I did interview him the other day, we spoke about all the policies he had done in Ireland and I asked him about the environment generally and whether he was positive that we were on the right track at a global level, and he wasn't. And you can see over the last number of weeks, particularly around Europe, the heat waves that are happening much earlier than they normally happen. You're looking around Greece where we've seen a number of tragic deaths. It's also heading in the likes of Cyprus and some of the other Mediterranean countries. You look at the Middle East, you look at what's happening in Saudi Arabia with the Hajj and the hundreds of deaths there have been, and you look at it as well in India. Like, he is right, the planet is on fire.
Absolutely. And I think the Hajj story is really, really scary. So I think more than 1,000 Hajj pilgrims are dying amid temperatures approaching 52 degrees in Mecca, and the Grand Temple in Mecca is reaching temperatures of 52 degrees. And a huge problem with this. So the Hajj is one of the five pillars of Islam. So if people are physically and financially able, you have to take one pilgrimage during your lifetime. But because of the stipulation that if you're financially and physically able, it means that a lot of older people are saying, oh, well, this might be the last year that I do this. But of course, when they are doing it then in such extreme temperatures, it leaves them incredibly vulnerable. And the other thing is that it can cost a lot of money to do the pilgrimage. Mm. And so there are a lot of unregistered pilgrims and they don't get the protection of air conditioned stops. They don't get guides. And so they're incredibly vulnerable. And so I think there were 658 Egyptians who died, 630 of whom were unregistered pilgrims, which is really, really scary. But this is, of course, the result of these incredible heat waves that are sweeping across, and we're seeing that in Greece. I think we've lost several tourists. Of course, last week there was Michael Mosley, the BBC presenter, who just went on a walk and got lost, but then the heat was so extreme. So these are really, really scary times.
Ian Power, the heat waves, we do get them. They are naturally occurring, but not at this time of year and not to the extent you're looking at in various parts. Even in America, it's happening as well. You're looking at parts of America up to 45, 46 degrees.
Yeah, I was talking to a colleague in New York this week who was kind of remarking about how quickly things have turned and how hot it's been, and they've started to open up kind of air conditioned centres that they make available to people to go in and cool down. And, you know, I think, yes, absolutely, there are always kind of these adverse weather events that come out, you know, that are atypical. But I think, you know, the fact that we're seeing so many more and the fact that we're seeing so many more weather events, and it's connected to another story of the week in terms of potatoes, you know, here we're all being affected maybe in different ways by the changes in climate. And ultimately, I guess you have to, if you're somebody who has been vilifying the green agenda, you have to ask yourself the question, like, you know, the world is heating up and these are the effects of it. And, you know, if we are all to live on the planet and for future generations to be able to make a living and to not have to experience these kind of events, you know, we don't know if we've gone past the tipping point and whether or not, you know, kind of these events will continue to get worse. So I think that's even more of a reason for us to take a more aggressive action on climate, you know.
I will get on to that potato shorty story because it was really good earlier on this week, but I do want to just skip forward to, because myself and John Gibbons and on The Last Word in the Environment last night read massively over Just Stop Oil, who was targeting various things, including Stonehenge, but also activists tried to spray Taylor Swift's jet at Stansted Airport. Like, I criticised John over the tactics, but he makes the point that we have to do something fairly radical.
Yeah, and I think the private jet issue is really huge because so many celebrities have them and so many millionaires and billionaires have them and billionaires that we don't know. And I think celebrities like Taylor Swift, who are so visible, become the face of this issue. But Taylor Swift's private jet has released 8,000 tons of carbon. And one of her spokespersons said, oh, well, that's not Taylor specifically because she loans out her jet. But you're like, but that's still huge. That's still under your name. And the defense of this is that she has to travel to concerts and it's saves more money and it saves time and it means she can do more concerts and then that can raise money for the kind of the local areas. But that is such a huge issue. And again, if we're talking about long-term thinking, why are we prioritising people being able to get somewhere as fastly and as conveniently as possible over the impact it's going to have on the environment? I will say I found it quite unnerving that protesters were able to just cut through a fence into the private airfield at Stansted. That was quite unnerving.
Are you worried about your private jet?
My private jet, yes, it's parked. It's so annoying to parallel park.
And they didn't even get her jet as well. They just got two random jets. But look, I guess, you know, John's point is that you need to have these acts of kind of, you know, controversy, essentially, to kind of get people talking about it. I mean, I think for me, the stories that about the heat wave and the loss of life across, you know, either whether it's at the Hajj or across Europe or in the US, I think those should be enough to get us talking. They're clearly not. And so therefore, maybe Just Stop Oil have a justification for what they're doing.
I think, unfortunately, a really sad reality of the world is that people's empathy shuts off a lot of the time when numbers get big. It's almost like it becomes so abstract. And I will say that a lot of people would have less empathy for people because they are either from developing countries or that they are people of colour. And a lot of people, their empathy levels are not engaged, which is deeply concerning on a human level. But I think Just Stop Oil, they're tapping into this idea of what is sensationalist and what gets people talking. And unfortunately, we live in a kind of a society and a media world where people will tune in more to ideas of stories about Taylor Swift than stories of Indian people dying, which is really concerning.
Taylor Swift has two private jets, apparently, according to one of our texters, who another says, God help those Just Stop Oil protesters if the Swifties catch them. Now, one story, I actually covered a story earlier on this week that did actually get a lot of people reacting to it, was the great national potato shortage. Ian, are you worried that you can't get your favourites? Because it is real.
Ashamedly, I'm one of these people who probably couldn't tell the difference between a Kerr's Pink and a Rooster, so I'm not currently personally concerned, but the people of Kerry are up in arms. And
you and Eamon Ryan, you just hate Kerry and everything they stand for,
So Dan Horan, he's the owner of Horan's Fruit and Veg in Tralee and Killarney, County Kerry. He's been on TikTok this week, and I went on to watch his video where he's trying to sell a different variety, a Premier apparently, which I'd also never heard of, to the people of Killarney and Tralee, because unfortunately there is a shortage of their favourites. Apparently Rooster's up there, Kerr's Pink's too, but apparently, yeah, because of essentially the excess rain, because farmers weren't able to get potatoes into the ground early enough, there are these shortages. I think this year is particularly difficult because it seems like it's been the first time in a long time where, if ever, for some generations of farmer, where they've had to plant in June. But it comes on the back of last year as well, where there was a shortage. So, you know, usually there would be kind of some sort of store or people would be holding some back from earlier in the year. But apparently those stores have been fully used up. And so the people of Kerry are quite discerning about their potato type and their preferences. And good luck to them. Fair play to them for it.
I do think there's something kind of hopeful in it because I read the sentence like this. The biggest shortage of potatoes in living memory. And we are Irish, right? That is quite a charged sentence. And so I was expecting people to be quite nervous. I was expecting kind of colonial trauma to come up. And instead you get people going, excuse me, I'm not changing to a rooster. So I like that we're in a place of kind of safety where people are feel able to be brand loyal instead of having kind of deep generational trauma around this issue. I think that's quite hopeful.
Yeah, it is quite worrying though. Like, I know we make light of it, but you know, there's a guy, Colin Buttermer, he's a potato grower from Fermoy, County Cork, and he's 24, and he's the next generation of farmer. He is a farmer already, and he sits on the IFA's National Potato Committee. And you know, he was saying that there's always been kind of wet years and dry years, but at the same time, the way the weather is going, he said it's really frightening. So I think for people who, you know, we might laugh about preference, but you know, ultimately for people who are trying to make a living out of it, it is a really difficult situation.
And it's been a hard living for many years because, as I was told the other day, that the price has just gone down and down, and allowing farmers to invest in, you know, potentially new sources of income or growing better quality products or different products has just been really hard.
Yeah, and as well, you know, it's really interesting to read in the same piece that Chagas are working on trying to come up with new varieties that kind of take a shorter span to kind of grow and also to kind of protect them from things like blight and other diseases as well. So, I mean, I think it's really important for farmers that they're able to kind of produce their crops and to be able to make a living. And it is really concerning. Again, it's not unlinked to the conversation we had earlier about climate and the green agenda.
And it's not, you know, them losing 2 months of income is over their kind of busy crop selling.
And lots of these are family companies as well. Absolutely. Let's move on because The Nation have spoken. They have given their views on one of the most important topics going. It is food, but it is the most important food and is the biggest brand for Irish consumers. Who is it, Ro?
It is Brennan's Bread. Today's Bread Today. I haven't seen an ad for Brennan's in about 15 years, and that is ingrained in my memory. I just think when I was growing up, these ads were on TV all of the time. And I think now with streaming and stuff, I have questions about whether younger generations are seeing ads, particularly for Irish companies anymore. But I think there is just such a generational loyalty that these ads were everywhere. Families staked their claim over what bread they prefer, what brand of tea they prefer. And there is such a sense of loyalty within families. But the biggest brands in Ireland have remained slightly unchanged. So as usual, there's Avonmore, there's Tato, there's Cadbury's Dairy Milk, and there's Jacobs. But new additions were Ballygowan has broken into the top 100 brands for the first time, reaching number one, which is really interesting. But I think it's they were saying that brands either gained or maintained their positions in the ranking due to product development and innovative ways to promote their products. And I was like, is that true though? Are Brennan's trying to be innovative or are they trying to give people the exact same taste of their toast that they always have?
I think, you know, if you look at the other, you know, top five, Dairy Milk is number four. And like they have been doing some really interesting stuff through out of home advertising where like if you scan a particular kind of billboard, you know, you can send a bar to your friend and things like that. So I think perhaps that's kind of what they're talking about when they describe innovative marketing.
Now, we have already alluded to Taylor Swift several times, and I think over the next week we're going to be talking about Taylor Swift a whole lot. But it turns out she's not just coming here for a concert. We're welcoming her home. She's one of us.
Yeah. Apparently, Taylor is a Derry girl. So the Irish Emigration Museum, they've come out with some research that they've done through genealogy experts at the Irish Family History Centre at EPIC. And they've found that it's very well known that her great-great-grandfather, George Findlay, was from Dublin. But they commissioned the centre to look more about the Findlay family as there wasn't much in the public domain. And apparently, they were astounded to find out that she's actually a Derry girl. So she explained that Susan Davis, who was a 21-year-old dressmaker, and Frances Gwynne, a 21-year-old weaver, emigrated from Derry in 1836, and they both left on the ship with groups of friends. And we know that they met on the ship, and 3 years later they got married in Philadelphia and went on to have six children, one of which was Mary Gwynne, who was Taylor Swift's great-great-grandmother. So it's thought that Taylor is unaware of her heritage. I've seen...
Oh, we'll make her aware.
Well, I've seen the mayor of Derry, Strabane, already on Twitter today inviting her up to Derry. I don't know if she's going to make it that far, although she does have the jet at her disposal.
She does have the jet.
Oh, I can imagine there are people now trying to do the... Well, like with Barack Obama, when he suddenly became Irish, there will be somebody
like,
who will...
What square are we going to give her? What garage
demeter
are we going to give her exactly? But I do think, I mean, Nicola Coughlan obviously starred in Derry Girls and is riding the wave and queen of the internet because of the success of Bridgerton, and I do just feel there's going to be a Taylor Swift Nicola Coughlan Derry Girls collab now that I'm excited about. But I do think, I mean, look, Taylor Swift is great. Everyone who goes to her concert says that they're the most fun ever. I think she's very good, but I do still find it vaguely cringy that we are so determined to create Irish links with every celebrity who is on the moment.
Of course we are, because we want them to love us and come back here and spend a lot of money here.
I also can't wait for the Daily Mail to start claiming that she's British, because they always seem to do that with Irish people who are doing well, that they suddenly claim they're British, like that's British true. Actor Paul Mescal. So I wonder if she's going to be claimed as British as from the...
Well, we often criticise, you know, Americans for trying to create tenuous links back to Ireland, and here we are trying to create very tenuous links to people who are famous from America too.
I can say I got called out online because I tweeted something out about Taylor Swift the other day about how she is going to push up British inflation, but such is the impact that those concerts have. Like, if you try to get a hotel room at short notice in Ireland, anywhere near Dublin next week, you're going to be paying high three figure, if not low three figure.
Absolutely. And the Financial Times have done really interesting kind of pieces on both the impact of Taylor Swift and Beyonce tours, even just around Europe, and people travelling and flocking and bringing Americans over. There's a contingent of people who will descend on the city next weekend, not necessarily from any of the 32 counties on this island, but just to come from abroad to see her as well.
I think it's a generational thing, because there used to be something called the Oprah effect, where if Oprah endorsed a product or even a person, unfortunately she endorsed people like Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz, who are not doctors, but the product would absolutely shoot off in popularity and become like bestseller and sell out, and it became this cultural shift that you could mark economic trends and stock options if Oprah had mentioned it. So I feel like now generationally it's now the Taylor effect on the economy, which is kind of
we are so going to try and claim any Irish connection with her to her whatsoever next week, or any place she goes around the country. If she stays here for any length of time, they'll be trying to latch onto it. Can we move on? This story, which of you wants to take this one? Because a New Zealand woman has taken her boyfriend to a dispute tribunal because he wouldn't take her to the airport.
I am obsessed with this story. I think this is fantastic. This New Zealand woman tried to take her boyfriend to court for breaching a verbal contract because he promised to take her to the airport, and she gave him a window of, I need to be collected between 10 and quarter past 10 in the morning to make my flights. He didn't show up. She missed the flight. She missed a concert. She was forced to delay her travel and incurred an excess of expenses, as she said, and also paid for ferry tickets for her and her boyfriend to go on a holiday at a separate time. And she said, I want that money back, because why should I be expected to pay for both of our travel if you have made me miss my travel? And tried to take this to court, saying this was a verbal agreement, he broke it, and I incurred expenses, so why shouldn't this be taken seriously? It sadly wasn't taken seriously, but now I am obsessed with this idea of having kind of a social court where we have to take these kind of breaches in friendships and relationships and say, like, I'm volunteering to be the judge duty of this. But I thought it was very interesting because they did craft a legal argument saying that this wasn't a legal obligation. This was kind of part of the wear and tear of a social relationship, and there is a difference between making a promise and creating a contract. So they were laying out their reasoning very clearly. So maybe the next person who brings a case will be able to use the legalese and win.
Well, what I want to know is, the tribunal person said that it was because it wasn't a legally binding relationship. So I want to know if
you're married,
rings on the finger, and you made your vows,
you're going to be careful.
Do you get the money back for your kennels? And that's, for me, I thought that was really fascinating.
But haven't there been cases of taxi drivers not coming for scheduled pickups and people losing it, and people making claims against the taxi company and saying that this was an agreement, or I paid for my taxi in advance, this was a service that was promised and I incurred costs? And I think a few of them have been successful, but they might have been settled from the taxi company rather than reaching all the way.
Both of you tried out
your boyfriend.
Both of you tried out with your partners over the weekend, see how you
my
get
my boyfriend,
them.
AKA taxi driver, legally binding agreements,
Roe McDermott and Ian Power, thank you very much for coming in, for going through the week's trending stories.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.